Hola, chicas. Love having you here on the Encuentras Your Voice podcast. I'm your host, Consuelo Crosby, coming to you every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time from San Francisco, California, sending a shout out to our comunidad worldwide and loving everything Latina. Here to give you some joy in midweek, abrazos for anything that may be getting to you, and manifesting a gentle life ahead. This is where you sit back, relax, and get to know your next new amiga as she unwinds her story, shares her pain points, and encourages all of us to keep going towards our dreams. Now today, even after an emotionally filled 2 hours of talking, of which you're going to hear less than an hour, there is so much more to know about Annette Chavez Macias, Latina author of Big Chicas Don't Cry, her first published novel, and one that speaks from her soul. It doesn't help that she also has an alias for her romance short stories. Sabrina Soul heightens Latina leads into an always happily ever after ending. That's not reality, you say? But it's mandatory for a romance author, and a far cry from her fictional novel prowess. Or is it? Big Chicas Don't Cry is the heart-driven novel, loosely based on Annette's own life and family, especially her abuelas. It follows a year in the life of four primas, inherently completely different, yet joined at the hips like siblings. This life story summons up all the feels of a lifetime of a first-gen Latina discovering herself in society that doesn't claim her, a cultura with preconceived notions and a familia with expectations. It's a story that almost didn't get written for so many reasons. First, it took decades for Annette to let time tell the story, only to face 13 rejections after she finished the manuscript. 13 rejections. But that just shows you how valuable this story is to Annette, her four generations of family, and to any mujer who identifies with love, family, and following your dreams. Annette spills all the tea on how she found herself again to write the novel of her dreams, leading a first-gen oldest daughter Latina life, writing romance short stories versus novels, finding community supporting and celebrating her wants, and the infamous imposter syndrome of not being Latina enough to write her own story. Find out what brought Annette to sudden tears on the episode, the long silence you will hear and hold it in your hearts, and what her all-time binge-worthy shows are on the emotional episode of this Encuentras Your Voice podcast. Get your tissues, your notebooks, some bevies, find your favorite spot to relax, and discover your next best amiga, Annette Chavez Macias. We'd love to welcome today Annette Chavez Macias to the podcast. Thank you for sharing your time and your energy, and most importantly, for us sharing the journey of you coming all the way through your life and becoming the published author that you are. Welcome, Annette.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity and being able to share my story.
It's a full-blooded one, that's for sure, from what I discovered of you. It really is an inspiring one. So why don't you start off with sharing your upbringing, your cultural heritage, and what it was like for you?
I consider myself to be Mexican-American. My father came from Zacatecas to the United States when he was 18 years old. And my mother is second generation Mexican. She was born here in the United States, but her family is originally from Chihuahua and also Zacatecas. I grew up in Southern California, in an area called the Inland Empire. But I really did spend a lot of my childhood growing up in Los Angeles because that's where my father's mother lived and his brothers and sisters. So we would spend our week here in Inland Empire, and then on the weekends we would see my family on that side. I'm the oldest of three kids, so I definitely relate to that first daughter responsibilities that is very prevalent in our culture. So I was the overachiever, responsible daughter. I went to Catholic school, private Catholic school, and I was just one of a handful of Hispanic students. And so growing up, it was kind of a challenge to kind of balance that. I probably was not as proud of my heritage when I was a child and a teenager because, you know, you're just trying to fit in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, during that time, you know, I grew up in the 80s. It was a different, you know, it wasn't
different world.
Was a different world from what it is now. My mom's side of the family all lived within 5 miles of each other. Mm. So we were more about spending time with relatives. Mm-hmm. You know, my cousins were my best friends. And we didn't do sleepovers at other people's houses.
Also part of the cultura, though.
Yes. So we're very insulated, I believe.
I see.
And I think when you're brought up that way, you have two responses. One, you just want to get out of there and go live your life and do your own thing.
Okay.
So for me, I came back. I still live within, you know, 5-7 miles of my aunts and uncles and my mom. I was a big reader growing up, and my mom was a very big reader. She was a big romance reader. And so there was always books in our house, and we were always at the library. Because my parents both worked. So if they couldn't pick us up after school, then we walked to the library and we just hung out at the library until, you know, 5 o'clock.
Were you raised English speaking or Spanish speaking?
I was raised English speaking because my dad did not speak English very well. Growing up in a household where my parents spoke Spanish to each other, I could understand, but I couldn't hold full conversations with them back in Spanish. Now, of course, and I'm older, I wish that I was fluent, not just because there's definitely opportunities when you're a bilingual speaker, but just the fact that for me, as I've grown up and started to have my family, it's become more important to me to be connected to my culture. Mm-hmm. And language is a big part of that. And also, you know, sometimes you get judged when you look like me and people come up to you and expect you to speak Spanish and you can't, or you can't do it, you know, up to a certain point. Exactly. It's been a struggle.
Yeah. The identity issue, especially self-identity when you get older, and you realize there is such a thing, and then you're self-identity within the cultura is really the more profound, intimate issue when it comes to trying to figure out who you are, how do you fit in, where do you fit in, and always being a little not good enough in either camp. And none of the adults really took that piece to make sure, because they don't know.
Right.
Like, they tend not to know that this is even an issue.
Right. And also, my mom grew up in the United States. She was born here. But when she was going to school, there was that stigma where you don't speak Spanish in school. So yes, she had to speak Spanish at home with her parents. But when her and my dad met, she spoke enough Spanish to talk to him. But there was some, you know, barrier there with language because he barely spoke any English. And again, her Spanish was not the best.
But here you found yourself in the library, loving it, becoming full-blown reader. Did you think you wanted to be an author?
I think part of me did. But when I'm that young, I didn't realize, you know, what that entailed or what that meant. I just knew that I liked to write stories.
Where did the story writing come from?
Definitely, I think, from reading. Like I said, because we were so sheltered, you know, the books gave me a way to look outside of my own world and, you know, learn about these different things. And because my mom was a big romance reader, that was a lot of what I read. I just loved reading about these other places that I had never been to and situations that I had never experienced. And so from that, it was just a natural outlet for me to start writing my own little short stories or different poems. When you're in middle school, everything is just so dramatic.
You think?
I guess this was, writing was my outlet to get those feelings down on paper. Even when I went to college, I knew I wanted to major in some type of communications. But, you know, in college, they don't offer a degree and be an author. So communications is as close as you're going to get to writing, to being, you know, part of a creative writing. And I ended up on the school paper for college. And so I think for me, yes, in the back of my head, I always knew I wanted to be a writer. But I just kind of took a little detour on becoming an author.
Oh, there we go. Okay. So you stayed with it, creating your writing from an early age and then going into it professionally. But we don't appreciate the difference sometimes on the other side, that there's your writing in your professional writing, and then there's becoming an author. What was that catalyst? What got you into becoming a published author?
It really was because of a story idea I had in my head. And after I graduated college, I was a journalist, I was a reporter. And
oh, wow.
So I did that type of writing for a while. And, you know, that when you're, you know, in your early 20s, being a newspaper reporter is, you know, is exciting because it's never the same thing every day. You know, it's something different every day. And so I enjoyed that. And I enjoyed telling other people's stories. And so then I went into corporate writing. And I was content with that until I was about to turn 40. And I had a midlife crisis.
Or an epiphany.
And I just kind of thought to myself, you used to want to be an author. You used to want to write your story. So what happened? And maybe, why don't you try it? Just see what happens. And I did already have a story that was in my head, but I had no idea about what that meant to write a novel. I had no idea. But I knew I just had the story that I wanted to tell. Well, I actually didn't even have a story. I had scenes in my head.
Oh.
And so when I decided, let's do this, let's put it down, I just started writing one day the scenes that had been in my head. And that's kind of like my process even now, is I'll start with a scene and then I'll write it down and then I'll think of another scene until I have a whole bunch of unconnected scenes. And then the challenge is forming them into a cohesive story. Luckily, I had kept in contact with a woman from college, and she would post about her books coming up. I reached out to her and I said, can you give me some advice on how I can get published? And she just wrote me this long, long message and response about everything that she had done and what she recommended I do if I was really serious about becoming an author. And so one of the big pieces of advice that she had, or she encouraged me to do, was to come to a meeting, because she belonged to a writer's group. It was a romance writer's group because she was a romance author. And it was local. There was probably over 100.
For heaven's sakes.
Mainly women. There were, you know, scattering a few men. But
now, is this a meeting in the romance genre?
Yes, it was a romance writers group.
Okay.
So all of these people were romance authors or were trying to be romance authors.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really, you know, inspiring to see all these people mm-hmm. who have the same dream as you. And some of them had obtained it, and some of them were just, you know, the same level as me, just trying to do something with their, like, you know, with the first book. Because I could see that other people were doing it and that there was a resource for me to use, then that encouraged me to pursue it.
So that was the community that you felt, okay, bolstered by. Like, I'm not alone in this dream and I can make it real because it's real for these people who are willing to support you, it sounds like, who are very gracious in their ideas for you. So did you start in romance? This is a romance writing group. You had grown up reading your mom's romance novels. Did you start off in romance?
I did. So my friend, who was a romance author, she actually helped me by suggesting ways that I could get published, because even though I was working on this other book, you know, it wasn't finished. It wasn't a finished manuscript. So I was not ready to publish yet. She said, oh, by the way, you know, one of my publishers has this series of short stories and the world is already built. They just want writers to come in and do one little story. They gave you the parameters, the requirements,
okay.
What kind of characters had to be, you know, and so it was easier. And that ended up being my first publishing contract, was a short story for this romance publisher. And yeah, so that's how I got started.
So that almost had an immediate turn as soon as you made the decision, no, I'm going to do this. It was almost a manifestation. Then everything started, not that it was easy, but at least it opened all these opportunities.
Yeah,
it was much easier than maybe what you had thought of in your own head it was going to be like.
Yes, and a part of me also, because now in the romance writers community, I would hear about people who had written books and they never sold, or, you know, it took them years to get published. And so I felt like almost like I had cheated in that way.
Or maybe we're exactly where you were always born to be.
It's funny because, yes, for romance, it was, like you said, it wasn't easy, but I didn't struggle. Like mm-hmm. I thought I was going to struggle to get that first contract. Whereas when I went into women's fiction, that was a different story.
So it just
depends. And, you know, mm-hmm. nobody's one experience is going to be the same for another.
Absolutely. So
you just have to do what's right for you.
Absolutely. Well, congratulations. Now, I have a few questions. I'm a little curious.
Sure.
The romance seems to go, okay, stereotypically, I'm going to own that. But romance goes hand in hand with our cultura to begin with. Very romantic cultura. Okay. Were your characters and the storyline from the culture in the romance?
Yes, but it didn't start out that way. Or in my head, I didn't set out for my characters to be Hispanic. And I think that was because of what I was used to reading. I was used to reading about white women, white men. That's what my mom read. So what I had grown up reading. And
Traditionally, that's what was going to be available.
Right,
not even traditionally, just in the system. They framed it.
Exactly.
So that's what was going to be available.
Mm-hmm. And so it was actually my friend. When we were talking about, you know, whether or not I, you know, should write a story. And mm-hmm. then she asked me the question, are your characters going to be Latino? And it took me a second because I had not even considered that because I didn't know I could. And I think it was her telling me that it was a possibility that mm-hmm. once I realized that I could do it, then yes, I made a conscious effort and I made a conscious decision that the books that I was going to write were going to feature specifically Latinas as the main characters. My main female characters were always and will always be Latina because I because I have that opportunity to do it.
Yeah, you become the voice, literally, right. and opening the doors, not even opening the doors, kicking down the doors to make it more, this is what you're going to get on the shelf. And not because this is a Latina genre. It's just the romance story is with a Latina character.
Right.
And so it becomes mainstream. This becomes mainstream.
Right. But, and I also, I will say, though, I did, even though I had made that decision that, yes, I was going to only write Latinas, there was, you know, the little voice in my ear saying, but are you the right person to write Latinas? Because of, you know, because I wasn't fluent in Spanish. And yes, while I had this Mexican upbringing, I also believed I came from a background or community where, I'm not sure how to say this. Well, it's just, you know, what I had heard all my life. Maybe I'm not Latina enough to write about Latinas.
Yes, that's very real. It's very real and unfortunately still real today for the younger generations, even though it's more wide open. But there you are on this little precipice then, knowing with full intent that this is what you're committing to do on behalf of your own identity, but also for the community. And yet you're having imposter syndrome as an author, but you're also doubling down and having imposter syndrome within the comunidad for your own writing. Like, that's a double whammy. That's a lot to carry on, especially in creating the voice for your stories.
It was. For example, if it came to using Spanish in the book, I had my mother or my other friends who were fluent, you know, I would send them or I would call them up. Okay, so I want to say this. And then I would tell them, is this how you say it? I would even call my dad. And so he would tell me, no, you have to say it this way. Or so I had the resources to make sure that my characters were authentic. All of my stories are still centered or inspired by my experience and my upbringing, because that's what I know and that's what I can be confident in. And so if somebody would ever come back and say, well, that couldn't happen. Well, yes, it could, because it did.
Okay.
You know? So for me, I think that's how I balanced it by, you know, on one hand, I was not confident in making sure that the pieces of culture that I was integrating in my stories were authentic and real. I made sure that the experiences were and that the emotions were, so that would come across as being authentic.
That was your, what do you call it? Like cornerstone. Mm-hmm. Like I am Latina. This happens. I know this happens. And it's different for everybody's experiences, but it could quiet that voice giving you doubt then in the writing. This is, you know, a little funny in that with all the novellas that were on TV, it never occurred to me, and they've been on for decades and decades here in the U.S., that there wouldn't be a more prolific exposure of romance novels with the Latino storylines. But I'm so happy that you had your family supporting you. And I don't want to jump ahead, but just a little teaser that I did notice in your book, which we will talk about soon, in the book, you need to have the Spanish dialogue in the conversations of your characters, because it just won't make sense otherwise. It just gets lost in translation if you try and say it any other way. So it was beautiful that you had this community of family and friends to incorporate that and make sure you had the authenticity in your stories. So it sounds like once you found yourself writing in your authenticity, in your authentic voice,
mm-hmm.
then things really began to flourish.
Yes, I think once I had made that decision that, you know, I was only going to write about Latina heroines, I just continued to write romance books that featured those characters, and not just them, but also the the Hispanic families that they came from. Mm-hmm. For me, it was more important that by showing she's Mexican-American, but she also has issues with her mother. She also has issues at work, or she just wants to find somebody who understands her. So those are all universal themes and messages. So the goal for me is always, I want those themes to be what readers take away. And the fact that her heritage is Hispanic, that's secondary. That's not just all she is. Even though I was publishing romance, I was still working on this one story. And now that I was more familiar because I had joined that writing group and because I was part of the romance writer community, I knew enough to know that the book that I was writing was not a romance. And there's a big distinction for those who aren't familiar.
Not familiar. That would be me. Although I have to take it on now.
Yes.
Okay. Big difference between writing romance and writing women's fiction.
Yes. So romance, the genre of romance, the one criteria or requirement is that there is a happily ever after or happy for now at the end of the book. So that means you're taking this reader on this journey of these characters who are going to fall in love. And the reader at the end of that book has to be confident or close that book knowing that these characters are going to be together forever.
Oh.
So,
I need to be a character in your romance novel.
So, for example, one of them can't die at the end. There can't be any type of like cheating scenario going on. The lines, you know, can get blurry or have gotten blurry as more and more people enter the genre. But the diehard romance readers, that is their one thing. And they'll call you out. If they end up with that book and one of them dies or there's a question about whether or not they're together, and they'll straight up say in the review, this is not a romance. So no, Romeo and Juliet is not a romance. It's a love story.
Okay.
Any of Nicholas Sparks' books, those are not romances. They're love stories. And because, like I said, because I was already part of this community, I knew that. And I knew that the book that I was working on was not romance. So I also knew that the book that I was working on was going to be women's fiction. And so women's fiction is more about the character's journey to discovering some truth about themselves. And because it's women's fiction, then it's, you know, the main character's a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So it's her journey to basically figure out her life and, you know, what she wants to do with it or dealing with some type of issue. So at the end of the book, you know, your character has gone on this journey of self-discovery.
Mm-hmm.
For people who may not be familiar with publishing, there are publishers that you cannot submit your novel unless you have an agent. And because I didn't have an agent for my romance.
I knew
if I wanted to sell this women's fiction novel, I needed to find an agent first.
Yeah. Okay.
And so that was a totally new.
Oh, this is a different side of the business now. This is like the major leagues now.
Yes.
Now you need a
different world. It's a different world.
In a whole
world.
Different process.
And also because it is a bigger target, you know, that you're trying to hit.
Yeah.
I did not really find that community in women's fiction that I had with romance.
And this women's fiction, this is a good turning point for us. Okay, let's just clarify in case there's any doubt out there. You had a full-blown career, still have a full-blown career writing short stories and romance. You had been also simultaneously working on this novel, women's fiction, throughout the whole time you have a career. But you also have the career as the responsible, keep paying the bills, full-blown profession in corporate writing.
Yes.
And raising a family and being all the things. I mean, you are explosively creative and professional. Keeping things moving. My goodness, where do you find all this energy? But thank God you do, because here comes this story that you've had for decades. in your head. It's coming out in down on paper. And it does get published. We're getting to that too. What is the premise? Did you keep your authenticity? Is this written in your authentic voice? What is the premise of this story that we're talking about?
So the story that we're talking about is Big Chicas Don't Cry, which is my debut women's fiction novel. It was published in 2022. And this story, although fictional, is inspired by my family and my upbringing. And so it took me several years to just finish the book because, yes, I was, like you said, I was writing romance and I was working full time and dealing with my family. So this piece of me, I kept under wraps. You know, this was not something I shared publicly. And it was because I think it was so close to my heart. Mm. And also because it was so close to real life, mm-hmm. I guess.
Your reality.
My reality, that it's sometimes hard to face that. And this book is not something I could have written when I was in my 20s.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So I think that's a reason maybe why it took so long to finish. I needed to experience things and like remove myself from those situations and look at them from a different lens and then translate them into a story. And I think the only reason I ended up finishing it was because through my involvement in the romance community, I had learned about a contest. So that was the inspiration I needed to finally finish the book because I wanted to enter this contest. And so I did. I finished it. I entered and I did not final. Mm-hmm. But I heard back from one of the judges and she loved the story. Her email was so long and I just was just so appreciative that she even took the time to do that because she did not have to do that. Mm-mm. So that gave me the confidence that there was something here with this mm-hmm. book. For the first time, I had somebody else saying, you have something. I started submitting to both agents and editors, and I got 13 rejections.
Oh, my Lord.
13 rejections. Yes.
I think you would have stopped after two.
And so like I had mentioned before, you know, you always hear about those struggles to get your first book published. So this was new to me because, again, the first time I tried to publish something in romance, it got published. So this this was new. And mm-hmm. so, of course, you know, you have that imposter syndrome again that mm-hmm. I'm not a good enough writer. But at the same time, you know, some of the comments and those rejection letters were, oh, I think you have a good voice, but I can't relate to your characters. And so there was that concern I had, you know, when I was first starting out publishing. Yes, that because my characters were Latina and it was centered around a Mexican family, that it did not have an audience. And so I put the book away. I stopped working on it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I put it away and I just said, you know what? Maybe I just need to work on something else or I'm going to focus, you know, just on my romance, you know, because I don't need an agent for the romance. So I'll just do that. Mm-hmm. But again, there was just something about the story that I couldn't forget. Mm-hmm. And so probably several months after that, the last rejection letters where I had stopped submitting altogether, I heard about another contest.
Who knew? Yeah, there was contests for authors.
Yes, right, exactly. I heard about another contest on Twitter where you would, you basically pitched your book in a tweet on this specific day and during these specific hours. And if an agent liked the tweet, then you were invited to submit something to them. I kept telling myself, oh, I'm not going to do that again. I'm not going to do it again. But the morning of the contest, I had texted, you know, my friends, and I said, oh, this is happening today. I'm thinking about, you know, doing it one more time. So, of course, they were all very supportive. Yes, do it, do it, do it. Yeah. And it was through that contest that I got my agent.
Yay. Oh, my God. Fantastic. Congratulations. Awesome. Oh, wait, this brings up so many questions. First of all, beautiful comments on the realization. I think this, again, you talk about being universal, even though it's a personal experience. This speaks universally, where you overcame so many barriers, even within yourself. We got you to the authentic voice. But then the barrier of this very personal story, even though it is fiction, overcoming the barrier of vulnerability, which I think is very universal for creatives, that this is very personal and intimate with you and you're putting it out there to the world. And then realizing now you're getting over the barriers of the system. Oh, I can't relate to a Latina story. It's like that speaks more to the you know, the system and stereotype, and the authenticity, you stay with it and you get this agent. What is the story about?
The book takes place over the course of 1 year, and it focuses on 4 Mexican-American female cousins. 2 of them are sisters. And when the book opens, they're young and they are as close as can be. They're best friends, even though they're cousins and sisters, they're best friends. One of the cousins, her parents have announced that they're divorcing. And because of that one cousin is going to move away. And so it's their childhood innocence that, well, that doesn't matter that you're leaving. We're still going to be close.
Mm-hmm.
But then the next chapter, and as you continue to read the book, you learn that that's not the case, that there is some estrangement between the cousins for different reasons. And so the story is told in alternating points of view. So each cousin voice is part of the book. They each have their own journey to take. But at the same time, while they're dealing with their own individual stories, there's a larger story about what's happening with their family as a whole.
I love that. I love that. Yes, it's universal, but within the cultura, there's a lot of issue. It's very difficult to leave the family and be independent for a lot of different reasons.
Right.
And all those reasons and burdens are put on you, the person who wants to leave. Is that woven into the story for a character?
Yes. So one cousin, that's exactly what she faces, is whether or not to be the first person in her family to leave and go off, you know, thousands of miles away and live her life without the, I don't want to say crutch, but without the comfortability of knowing that your cousins are 5 minutes away.
Yeah.
Or you're going to be seeing everybody, you know, within the next week or something. But the courage it takes to move to another city where you don't know anybody, you don't have any family, and try and make a new life for yourself independent of that. And then there's a character who struggles with that imposter syndrome that we've talked about. There is one cousin who's estranged from the family, and so she's going through her own issues, and she's very isolated because she has taken herself out of the family. And then the fourth character, her story is about finding her voice and standing up for herself, being strong enough to not walk away from the family, but to understand that she can have her own life too.
Have her own voice within this very, all her family's very vocal, very opinionated group of your family. You could still find your own voice. You can encuentras your voice, discover yourself, find your independence. The dynamic of the four primas, the primas being interwoven and so close-knit. And then, like you say, you find your independence, you find your authentic voice, you want to be your authentic self. Mm-hmm. And dealing with that, how do I be my authentic self? Stay close to what is a very tight woven community where they don't see you as different. I think that is a very universal experience, especially for women. Because I think the men are expected to go off and discover the world, explore, be independent. But the women, and more so in the cultura, especially you being the firstborn, are expected to stay close to the family, are expected to help the family, are expected, and to break from that.
Right.
It's like, what's wrong with you? Why are you doing that? Don't you love us? That's almost the very next thing. Like, don't you love us? It's so difficult. And so this is a perfect book for a lot of different personalities of women to really dive into, especially if you're trying to figure it out for yourself in the current day. And you do bring up the abuelita. Your dedication in the beginning of the book is to both your abuelas. The abuela in the story is a very main character. How does that touch back on your own experience?
Well, I think for me, that was the really personal part of the story. When I was writing the book, the plots changed over the years because I was working on it for so long. But what did not change was the character of Abuelita, who is the great-grandmother of the cousins and the four cousins. So even though I never, in the beginning, I didn't know what kind of book this was going to be and what the real story was going to be, I always knew there was going to be Abuelita and there was going to be four cousins. And so for me, my story with my family, I could not tell it without talking about
No, it's beautiful. That's so beautiful.
That's book. Every time I read the book, I cry. When I edited the book, I cry. And that's because it really is a tribute to my great-grandmother. She had already passed by the time I wrote this book. She lived to be 100 years old.
Beautiful.
But we called her Abuelita. And she was just as feisty as the Abuelita in the story. And she really was the inspiration for the book.
Oh.
Because she had 13 children. So even within those, my great aunts and uncles, for her, it was always about family and God. And so that's what the book for me wanted to show. And then I also had a grandmother who was Abuelita's second child. And Abuelita lived next door to my grandmother. And so whenever we would go see my grandmother, we would go walk next door to go see Abuelita.
Oh,
so
love it.
Both of them were really the inspiration for the book. And unfortunately, in the middle of editing the book was already done. I was just doing edits. She passed away.
Oh.
So she never got to see this book.
Mm-hmm.
She knew I wrote books, you know, but again, her English wasn't very good. So it's not that she would ever read him, but, so that's why I dedicated the book to both of them.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, it is so beautiful and a tribute, and I'm so sorry, but I love that she must have known. I just believe at that level. It's not a reality level, but it feels like she knew she could go because you had finished and that you had memorialized both of them in this story and in their relationships and how they affected the Primas in the family, and you've kept them here with us forever. And we had a little peek. But so she never knew you were writing the story that included her relationship in the family.
No.
Oh, wow.
Because before the book was published, the only other person who had ever read the book was my sister. And so nobody knew what the book was about. They just knew that I was writing a book that was kind of loosely based on our family.
Oh, that's typical.
So no, she never knew what the book was about.
Oh.
And she never knew that she had a role in the story. When we launched the book at Barnes & Noble, I wanted to make sure that it was at a local Barnes & Noble. And all the family showed up. All the family bought the books. And it's been really special for them and for me because they can see our family in this book.
Mm-hmm.
I think the heart of the book, they know where that comes from.
Mm-hmm. You've given them full spectrum at that point. One, that you are so dearly attached to your family, to your abuelita, your abuela, and you bring them forward in this experience. You're validating, one, their life and their relationship to each other, and to especially you as the author. But even bigger, and none of them could have ever seen this coming, you're validating their life and their relationships on this huge platform of a published book releasing in Barnes & Noble. I mean, that, I can't imagine they saw that coming, where this is the importance that goes with it. Because like you say, for yourself, there's imposter syndrome and there's a feeling that we need to assimilate, or there's a feeling that you keep a low profile, you know, that, you know, que va a decir la gente, just shh, don't say anything. But no, here you go, launching this book, huge spotlight, Barnes & Noble published, everyone's going to read what it's like. That is a completely different voice for them to hear. They must have been, I mean, there's a lot of emotion in all that.
I had one cousin tell me that he had just read the first chapter and he started crying because he said,
yeah, yeah,
just the description of the house. He said, that's grandma's house. So for them, it was also personal. And I think it has been really emotional, obviously. To not just have a book published that was so important to you, but to have your family just so proud and kind of even take ownership of, this is our story.
Yes.
Even though technically it's not. But there's enough of it there where they feel like I've told our family story.
Across four generations.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a huge representation that, again, it speaks at a universal level, but in and of yourself, you're not just telling your story, that you're telling four generations. I love it. And so how did it affect your own identity? Did that start to evolve further in all this writing when you're really bringing out a vulnerable side, exposing part of who you are?
Definitely. Even when I was writing my romance books in those early years, for me, it was a way for me to connect further and deeper with my heritage. Because like I had mentioned, you know, I did have those doubts if I was Latina enough to write Latina characters. So in a sense, I kind of wanted to prove to myself that I was. And so that meant trying to speak Spanish to my grandmother or asking my dad for some recipes. Because my dad was a big cook, and a lot of my favorite Mexican dishes are from him. So actually learning how to cook them finally and sharing them with my family and, you know, just in a way being more vocal and not hiding my heritage. You know, I'm very vocal about promoting other Latina authors and writers because of this women's fiction book. My platform as an author has grown. And so I see that as both a privilege and a responsibility to always put my culture front and center so that other people who come from families like me and look like me can hold on to that and see I'm not the only one, or I'm not alone. And maybe even inspire them to go and do something that they were afraid to do before because they didn't think that they were Latina enough or good enough to do it.
That's beautiful. That's insanely powerful right there, is just not giving permission, but you're giving them agency.
Yeah.
And knowing they can turn to a community. That's why we do the podcast. It's like, no, there's a community of people that at some point, these beautiful women at some point have felt, thought, lived something that you're talking about. Even one little snippet. It just takes one little piece to make it feel and even trigger something within you. So you really, in your writing, do a lot for the population and the Latina authors that are out there doing it. You're doing a lot for the rest of us to find peace with things we didn't even realize we were carrying and maybe wearing us down. You know?
Right.
I love the characters. I love all four of them. I don't have any sisters. And I have to say, I am very much non-dramatic. Very vocal, very emotional, but non-dramatic of the female cousins. So this is giving me a little bit like, oh, okay, I dodged a little bit here. There's a lot going on. Now, before we get off this into what's coming up for you, I want everyone to know there is a BuzzFeed survey out there. I absolutely love this. A BuzzFeed survey to find out which of the four Primas you are. Mm-hmm. It goes through, I think there's 20 different, what would you do, A, B, C, D, in all these little circumstances. Okay, I came out to be Mari. What do you think about that?
To me, Mari is the cousin who is probably the most independent of the four. So maybe that's something that's a trait that, you know, came through on the quiz. And she's also the cousin who not so much is like vocal, but has her own thoughts. And she's not
we're two for two right now. Okay.
She's not going to be swayed, easily swayed by what everybody else thinks.
Thanks.
And she's not worried about what everybody else thinks. So maybe that's when it was then they came through for you.
I'm loving my Mari side, let me tell you. She's front and center. Definitely front and center. I really don't care what I think. But it is fun. So for anyone who wants to take the quiz, we'll have that in the show notes. What has this done for your imposter syndrome now?
You know, it never goes away. It never goes away. But Chicas Don't Cry has done so well. And I still get messages and emails every day about how much somebody enjoyed the book. And but at the same time, I'm writing another book. And in my head, I'm thinking, this book, nobody's going to love this book. Nobody's going to read this book. And I think every author goes through that. The minute you start a new book, it's like you forgot how to write a book. So, and you know, there's also coupled with that, though, there's also the weight of being as good as the first book or
Absolutely.
Even the second book. And so,
it's a lot of pressure. You get into the pressure of
yes.
expectation from readers. Then
exactly. And so that also fuels the imposter syndrome.
Absolutely.
Maybe I'm only a two book. Author.
No, you can't be. I think you were born to do this. This is the intent. And we don't even know why yet. I think we have yet to see the ripple effect of why. Where's the impact going to come?
So let's talk about the second book. Where are you in the process? What's the context for it?
So it's actually my third women's fiction. So the second book was Tu Sufragios that came out last year. And
I didn't know that one was already out. Oh, yeah,
that one's already out. And then so this book, I actually just turned in the second round of edits. It's still untitled. Mm-hmm. And I don't have an exact release date. We just know it's going to come out in the fall of this year.
Oh, fantastic. Congratulations. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. See, even in the time we've talked, I've lost track that there's a third book. Uh-huh. The second book being Tu Sufragios, uh-huh, which is already available for readers.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. I have to do some catching up by the fall to keep the third one coming.
And they're all standalone stories. They're not sequels or anything like that. It's their own individual stories.
Okay. Okay. But there's no BuzzFeed quiz for the other ones.
No.
It only works for Big Chicas. It's so much fun. It's so much fun. We should have. That would be a definitely great book club book, right? I don't know what that would open up if you start discussing it with a bottle of wine and a big group of women. Oh, my goodness. And just to clarify, you said Sabrina. Sabrina books are your romance stories because they're written under a different pen name.
Right. So, So Sabrina Soul is the pen name I use for romance.
So if you want your romance stories, you have to go look for the author Sabrina Soul.
Right. And then my women's fiction is under Annette Chavez Macias.
Okay.
And I have two different Instagram profiles for each, but I talk about all the books on both of them just because, it seems silly to me to hide one or the other from readers. And again, the reason why it's under different names is because I want the readers to trust, that the book that they're picking up from Sabrina is going to have a romance. And the book that they're keeping from Annette is going to be more focused on a woman's journey.
Mm-hmm. So we can say you are a very accomplished author at this point now in your life. I'd love to see Big Chicas on the big screen. I'd love to see that one turned into a film.
Oh, I would love that.
Right?
I would love that. Yeah. So, it's very hard to get books bought by studios. It seems like it's happening a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Sure, but it makes me feel like we need more studios and more studios interested in picking up the Latina community's stories. We need our own studios, right?
Yes, okay. Yes. And there is a wealth of stories already published that they can pick from. It's just a matter of the right person at the right time saying yes.
We have learned so much about you. We've heard so much of your life here on the podcast. What is something that we wouldn't guess about you?
I am a true crime addict. I am all about those true crime documentaries, any movie that's based on a true crime, I'll watch it. I don't know what it is. But for me to relax is to watch these murder shows.
Because they're so soothing.
Well, I have to say, I will only watch murder shows if I know that there is a satisfying ending to the story. So I don't like watching, the shows where there's people who are missing and you never know what happened to them, because that would keep me up at night thinking about this person who was never found. So for me, the story, I have to know in advance that there was a satisfying ending, that the bad person got what was coming to them. And yes, for me, that's very soothing.
Oh, I like that aspect. I never thought about it like that. Okay, justice done. Okay. I hear you.
I love it.
Well, I'm a Libra, so I'm all about justice.
Oh, I did. Oh, that makes total sense, right? Yeah. Okay, the balance of justice, Okay. We always give a shout out for a cafecito place. Are you a cafecito drinker?
It's not something I drink every day, but I enjoy it. I enjoy it.
Have you checked out any of the local cafes? Are there any Latina or Latino owned cafes in the area?
Yes, there's one in, so I, like I said, I live in the Inland Empire of Southern California. So I live close to the city of Pomona. And in Pomona, there's Mi Tierra. And so they have pan dulce, you know, which I would actually go to a coffee place and get, you know, something sweet. I have a sweet tooth. So I would probably, that would make me come back rather than the coffee.
Coffee's just to wash it down with.
Exactly. That's all it is for me. But they have a really good cafe Mexicano. So it has like a little bit of like a cinnamon flavor to it. So that's the one I get when I go there.
Nice.
With my pan dulce. Yeah.
And the pan dulce. More importantly, the pan dulce. Yeah. Right. We really, really honor and respect what you've done. And so grateful that you kept persisting. You just went with the flow. You didn't push that book out earlier. You didn't give up on yourself. But you found the timing where all the planets aligned and you wanted to bring it forward. We're so grateful you did. We're so grateful for your creative talents and really you stepping over and breaking down that barrier of your vulnerability and bringing this out for all of us. Thank you so, so much for sharing your story today, Annette. We are so honored to have you and so, so fulfilled in listening to your story. I really appreciate you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. I love talking about my books, but it's an honor just to be asked to talk about them. So thank you.
Yeah, we want to have you back when we get the third one. What's the teaser? What's the third one about? We have to drop with the teaser.
Oh, the third one is about three generations of widows who have to live together again for the first time in years and just kind of dealing with those old generational traumas and family secrets.
Oh my God. Okay. This is definitely, I won't even say this is my future. This is this is coming into my current day. Oh, awesome. I love that one. Yes. Yes. Oh, I'm going to be excited. Okay. I'm going to get on that book release list. This was a fantastic episode. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you again for asking.
Again, Annette Chavez Macias, a compassionate mujer filled with so many talents and visions that she brings to life for us as an author, mother, and one of so many in the four generations of her families. Could you not relate to so much of what Annette shared, from being the oldest first-gen daughter to putting your dreams on hold so you could just pay the bills? But now she gave so many lessons on how to keep those dreams alive and actually manifest them into your future reality with results beyond even your wildest dreams. Did anyone guess that true crime shows are her all-time favorite? Did you see that coming? I definitely did not. From a romance author who revels in family and memories and all things happy endings, I don't know. But take a look at her TikTok, The Romance Chica, for her hilarious, humorous side. Another part of her I did not see coming. You can find or request her two novels, Big Chicas Don't Cry and Too Soon for Adios, at your favorite bookstores, and eagerly await her third novel, When We Were Widows, coming out this fall. And to Annette, from all of us at Encuentros Media, Encuentros Your Voice podcast, and our listeners, you are more than enough. You are a treasure, a beacon, showing us Latinas finding our way in a life of living both aquí and allá, how to love and learn and never give up on any of our dreams. Catch the full episode video on our YouTube channel on Friday to really understand what you just heard. Follow and subscribe to all our social medias and the podcast at Encuentras Your Voice on any of your favorite streaming platforms like Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And tune in next week for our Pod Club episode, a 15-minute highlight
of the gems discovered in today's full-length chat with Annette Chavez Macias. We love that you have subscribed to this podcast and continue to champion women who understand the life of all things Latina. Step into your truth, ladies. Ciao. Be sure to follow and subscribe to the Encuentras Your Voice podcast so you don't miss a single episode. They will automatically drop into your listening device each week. And we'd really, really appreciate if you take a moment to add to the reviews that we already have. Tell us what you like, tell us what you're hoping to hear, and we will get there. Share this with your friends and family to help us grow our comunidad and keep following us on our social media. To Encuentras Your Voice, we are so grateful to you for helping us grow this community and would love to learn of all the amazing Latinas who you know are creating the world we thrive in. So reach out to me on social media at Encuentras Your Voice and let's keep leaning into our authenticity and pride. Help us make Encuentras Your Voice the place where you are 100% represented.